You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we've got some under-the-radar new music you need to hear. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. Later in the show, we'll talk with the head of the South by Southwest Music Festival about going virtual. But first, buried treasures. This is one of our favorite segments on the show, Jim. We're doing it more frequently, I would say, because there's just so much darn music out there that we can't get to
there
all
is.
The time.
Well, and you know, talking about South by Southwest later, we used to travel to Austin for some 2.5 decades every year, do the club crawls down 6th Street and Red River, and see these bands that would make a huge impact on us, that we would share, and that people would get to see by the summer festivals, right? None of that this year, but plenty to listen to nonetheless. I guess I get to go first this time, Mr. Kot, and I'm excited to get to my treasures. I'm going to start out with a band called Silver Synthetic that came together in New Orleans in the summer of 2017 with veterans of several other bands, garage rock bands around New Orleans, the Bottom Feeders, and Jeff the Brotherhood. Chris Lyons, a leader of the group, had been playing with the Bottom Feeders drummer, Lucas Bogner, since both of them were 15, and you can hear the tightness that they have. You know, it's a group that really comes together and syncs up as it's playing, a sort of chiming take on 60s rock, a little bit garage, a little bit folk rock, a little psychedelia, or as my buddy Ken said, a southern slacker velvet underground head music from New Orleans. You gotta love New Orleans. They are out with a self-titled debut on Third Man Records, the label Jack White built. I'm going to play a track called In the Beginning. I think it's emblematic of everything they're doing. You can hear a little bit of Television, a little bit of glam rock, like I said, a little of that Brit folk, you know, Fairport Convention, birdsy, chimey thing. All of it good, all of it wonderful, impossible not to love on first listen if you love any of those influences I just name dropped. Silver Synthetic, In the Beginning.
When I came to, there was no one around me. Then I saw you, it was so profound to me. Now I'm living like I should.
In the Beginning, Silver Synthetic. The new album is just out on Third Man Records, self-titled. All good stuff, Mr. Kot, I think.
Well, you were right about the 60s influence. I mean, that Sweet Jane, that's a 60s song, right?
I
definitely hear some Sweet Jane chords. I hear a bunch of guys that got stoned and really like those Sweet Jane chords. But the one line that got to me, in my dream, I see myself flying. And I kind of thought, you know, I get it.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe not even in his dream.
This will help us lift off, you know, so to speak.
Head music, yes.
You know, it has an insular quality, which the record I want to play next also has, I believe. An artist named Buggy Jive. Ain't Going Anywhere is the name of the album he put out. Professor Buggy Jive, as he calls himself, a.k.a. Brian Paul Thomas, is an artist who doesn't get out much by, you know, self-admission, and with our year of COVID last year, that became even more so.
Getting out even less.
Yes, indeed. Quietly uploading music, as he says, from a basement somewhere in upstate New York. There's a little bit of mystery he's playing out here. He says, I don't play out, I play in. You know? But he's been putting out music sporadically for a few years, and I love most of it. He created a little sanctuary for himself, and the whole idea is he surrounded himself with music and books that he valued, over the years. He makes a lot of references to this collection of stuff that he has around him that sort of sustained him last year. You know, on this new record, he's quoting from an E.M. Forster novel. He's quoting from a African-American composer named Will Marion Cook. He's quoting Joni Mitchell on the song that I'm going to play. Hmm. These are his inspirations, his sources of creative inspiration. And he says that this is the stuff that sustained him. He's pretty funny. I mean, the notes that he puts out on the album, during the test of humanity that we call the year of our Lord 2020.
Yeah.
This is what I did.
That's his phraseology. Yes, I love that.
This is what I did when I was in the basement. Ain't Going Anywhere, the title track from Buggy Jive's new album on Sound Opinions.
Hot damn, it feels good to be hiding from all y'all. Hot damn, it feels good, I ain't even gonna call y'all. I'm a couple three short of 13699, but hot damn, it feels good to be in it for the long haul. Ain't going anywhere. Hot damn, it feels good to be staying home day and night. Hot damn, it feels good to turn down gigs left and right. Every now and then I wanna leave, but I can do without it. I love y'all and I don't need to never, ever, ever hear you talk about it.
That is Buggy Jive, Ain't Going Anywhere, the title track from an album that he put out in the 2020 COVID year.
The miasmic year. Yes. You know, we listen to each other's tracks so we can comment on them, but we don't dive into the backstory. I was curious about Dr. Buggy Jive. You know what I kept flashing on when I was listening to it, Greg? If Bill Withers was alive and well and recording with a little bit of EDM hip-hop consciousness in 2022, I think it would sound a lot like
that's
that
an interesting
track
comparison
we just heard. Yeah,
the intimacy, you know, of the recording really got to me, and that's a good, good comparison.
Yeah, the honesty, the intimacy, and a sound that is completely of the moment. Greg, I'm going to play another band now that recalls the past but is firmly rooted in the present. Yo Kinky from Queens, New York. You know, we've been talking endlessly for more than a year now about bands that are trying to continue and record in the midst of the miasmic year, the COVID pandemic. But Yo Kinky is a duo, Laura White and Tom Unish, who actually came together and started post-COVID, have never played out yet, but have been recording some excellent, excellent music out now on a debut EP. I love the kind of throwback to one of those early 80s minimalist synth bands like The Normal, mm-hmm. right? Warm Leatherette, that classic early synth single. There's guitar, but it is very much in the kind of Gang of Four, you know, Chunka Chunka melodic line, or Magazine, a band mm-hmm. like that. Guitar melodies, drum machine, and Laura's vocals. They're minimalist, they're kind of aggressive, they're witty, they're always delivered with a sly wink. You know, she said of one of the tunes, she wrote it when she was going through a really difficult breakup and also listening nonstop to the Back from the Grave garage punk compilations. You know, there's an immediacy there that does recall garage punk, although the sound is, as I said, very modern. I just love this song. It's called Wire by Yo Kinky on Sound Opinions.
Anyone can tell I'm in line with the wire. Thing I wanna do is fight with you.
Pinky. That's not me talking to you, Greg. It's the name of the band. The song is Wire, self-titled EP.
That's pretty cool. You know, I like the way they added, especially when the bass came in. It starts off very minimally, and then the bass comes in and plays some counterpoint against the guitar, and I thought that had a really cool feel. And then that Morse code-like percussion instrument.
Yeah.
That sort of added like a weird touch to it, and it kept building and building. And at first I was disappointed that it didn't just sort of like explode open. But then I thought, you know, it's kind of cool that it's unresolved at the end. I don't know. I just kept, it sort of had hypnotic quality to it that I really enjoyed.
Well, and I'm fascinated by the idea of a band forging its identity under these difficult circumstances. If you go back to that early 80s period, you know, what the music was being limited by the technology that existed at the time, you know, and this is happening now,
right?
By the social distancing imposed upon us, the technology of the time. You know, nothing has exploded in 2020, 2021, Greg. So, it is unresolved. Life right now is unresolved.
A metaphor for the time we're living in.
A deep philosophical metaphor.
There you go. You know, people ask us, how do you find out about these buried treasures? What's your source material? Well, it comes from anywhere and everywhere and anywhere, and our listeners too. They're a big help. You know, got an email from a guy named Ben, who's a longtime listener to the show, lives in Woodridge, Illinois, and he said, "I'm a longtime listener. Just wanted to share this with you because it's made me so happy."
Yeah.
There appears to be hardly any attention being paid to this. And he mentioned this band, The Lungs. And actually, it was weird because that rang a bell, because I keep a running log of the potential buried treasures items that I, you know, may one day play on the show. And I go back to the list, and because I recall the name from there, and I remember in 2018 they had an EP that I think might have been their first record. And I said, "Oh, The Lungs, check this band out."
Yeah.
Well, thanks to Ben, I went back and revisited The Lungs,
newly
and lo and
timely.
Behold, they've got a new album out, a relatively new, called Psychic Tombs, which I love. It's a trio out of Los Angeles, and it's straight up. It's sort of a post-hardcore band blending elements of punk and metal. What I love about it is just this momentum that they have in their songs. There's pretty much a nonstop kind of one punch after another. But the vocals are fairly melodic, and on this song in particular, the backing vocals really make it for me. They sort of surge, these wordless backing vocals, and it sort of creates this very haunted atmosphere. And then the bridge in the song, this little breather between the final charge. I think the songwriting is really good. I mean, it's like 2 minutes, but you get a lot of little surprises packed into this very tight space. And I love that brevity, and I love that creativity within that tight claustrophobic space. It's The Lungs with a song called Visitant from their Psychic Tunes album on Sound Opinion. That is Visitant from The Lungs. Psychic Tombs is the name of the LP. Thank you, Ben, for the reminder.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. I loved it, too. That was a much-needed shot of adrenaline this morning. You know, Greg, I think our listeners know well that we never claim to know anything, and we love to spread the joy of preaching about music we're excited about on Sound Opinions, inviting our colleagues to join us. Today, we're going to welcome someone closer to home. Sol Delgadillo is a student at Columbia College Chicago. She's been working hard as our intern, and
yes,
we've
indeed.
Been thrilled to have her. So, Sol, you've been sitting in on shows and helping out on shows, but now you're on the show. Welcome to Sound Opinions.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us, what is your buried treasure pick?
So my buried treasure pick is a song called Fit in Full by Samia. The album came out last August of 2020. The sound can be compared to somebody like, I don't know, Clairo, Beach Bunny, a lot of indie artists like in their
mm-hmm.
early 20s.
Mm-hmm. What did you like in particular about this song we're going to play?
What I liked in particular about this song was it's sounds very like brilliant and triumphant, even though it's talking about something like body image. But yeah, I like the sound of it because it sounds like she's accomplishing something, even though it's sort of satire on, you know, diet culture and body image and things like that.
I love a good satire on diet culture, as you know, Mr. Cod. Let's hear this track, Fit and Full by Samia on Sound Opinions. Sol, I love that song, Fit and Full by Samia. Sol, this is probably ancient history to you, but the era that it was recalling for me was early to mid-90s and the alternative explosion, a lot of great women-led bands, you know, Hole and Veruca Salt and L7, that kind of propulsion married with melody, didn't you think?
Oh, yeah, and, you know, I think it inventive in a kind of a pop sense, you know, indie pop. That counterpoint guitar line was what really kind of hooked me into the song. I thought, you know, this is they're not trying to do anything super fancy. It's just a catchy song. And I think little touches like the counterpoint line are what really make it. Are you able to acquire these records for your work as an assistant buyer at a very prominent record store
in
the Chicago area? Yeah,
I am.
You're bringing some cool to the place?
Exactly, yeah. I recently started doing the TikTok for the store, too. So I've been bringing in a lot more 20-somethings.
Wow, that's a cool... And that's you're working masked at the store?
Correct, yes.
Oh, okay, all right. That's fun. I remember record stores.
Yeah,
I can't wait to go to one again. Rolling Stone Records, it's a Chicago landmark. If you've got an album we need to hear, tell us in our Facebook group or our Patreon community, or leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. Next, we'll share more of our buried treasures, and we'll talk about the festival where we used to find so many wonderful buried treasures, South by Southwest. That's coming up on Sound Opinions.
We're back. I'm Greg, he's Jim, and this week we're sharing new under-the-radar music you need to hear. Jim, it's your turn again.
I love when it's my turn, Greg, and I know you're going to love this one. I suspect you are anyway. You know, I don't have a formula to have one doom or stoner rock pick each time we do buried treasures, but there is just so much greatness in that genre. And the band I'm going to talk about is certainly just shot to the top of my list, Reverend Mother. Reverend Mother is actually the new name of formerly Priestess was their original name. I don't know if there's another Priestess that cracked down. They became Reverend Mother. It's a Brooklyn trio led by a ferocious guitarist and vocalist, a huge presence, Jackie Green. We don't have a lot of women fronting doom stoner rock, you know? And she does it with a vengeance. They have a bunch of recordings out there under the new name. They're just getting up and running. The EP is self-titled, Reverend Mother, and they're doing a cover. So I love this because I love the sound of the band. I love Jackie's vocals and guitar, and I love this song. Now, you know, we are both fans of Ty Segall, but Ty Segall's in what, conservatively, 98 bands?
At least, you know? Yes, that's this week.
So I was unfamiliar with this particular offshoot of Ty's, Fuzz, and they had a great song called Let It Live, and Reverend Mother is covering it. Reverend Mother, Let It Live. Let It Live, a cover of Ty Segall when he was in the Fuzz Band by Reverend Mother. I love everything about it. I love the cover. I love the title of the cover. I love the title of Ty's band. I love the name Reverend Mother.
Yes, I agree with all of that. Fuzz, that's kind of a cool band too. And I'd heard Fuzz and didn't realize it was another Ty Segall project.
It's years easy
ago.
To lose track.
And I'm going, oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Ty Segall did that too.
He's so everywhere.
It's a great cover of another great band, and I hope people who hear this will point their way back to Fuzz and discover another great band. So there's two for one in this choice, Jim.
Indeed.
I'm going to go do a 180 here because the next track I'm going to play is about as worlds away from Reverend Mother as you could possibly be, but I think it's still very high quality. This artist, Erica de Cassier, she is a Portuguese-born, Copenhagen-based singer-songwriter. Had a debut album in 2019 called Essentials. She was part of this loose affiliation of Danish artists known as the Regelbau Collective. That's a label that specializes in sort of deep house music, deep club music. And she was doing some music in that stable of artists. In fact, some of the producers in that stable are helping her out with this record. You know, but this record is not a house record at all. It's very much based more in the R&B tradition of like a Brandy, you know. Mm. And what I like about it, though, is that the guitar that's weaving through the track, you know, this combination of breakbeats and guitar, and it reminds me of an artist like Craig David back in the day who was making a lot of beautiful music with that combination of sounds. You wouldn't think they necessarily go together, but he somehow made it work. And her voice, it's very understated. It feels like she's whispering in your ear throughout this entire track. That rippling guitar, that voice, you know, that simple woodblock percussion that goes through the song. I love the fact that it's very stripped down. It seems like that seems to be a theme of a lot of what we're playing here is the very stripped down, bedroomish quality of the records.
You can't get together with the whole band, Eddie, right now, you know?
and it's a cool track. You know, she's bummed about losing her cool with her lover, but, you know, she makes regret sound sensual. You know, and I love the way that sounds. So Erica de Cassier with an intriguing track called Drama, released as a single this year on Sound Opinions.
I wrote you twice last night, wish that I could rewind, take back whatever I said, but I can't do that. Thought it was going so well, now I don't even know. Said you did this and that, best that I lay you low. I wrote you twice last night, wish that I could rewind, take back whatever I said, but I can't do that. Thought it was going so well, now I don't even know. Said you did this and that, best that I lay low. I don't mean to cause any drama, it's just somehow it always gets me. Everybody says I'm so reasonable.
Erica DeCassier. Drama is the name of the track. I can't wait to hear more music from this artist.
Well, you know, everything you were describing, I was with until you started waxing rhapsodic about the voice. And that was a real impediment to me, Greg. I am not a fan in general of that wispy little girl voice, right? It always seems affected and put on and unnatural. And why a 20-something woman wants to sing like an 8-year-old talking to a stuffed animal, I hate that.
She's in her bedroom, you know, that's her voice. I think I love the fact that she's not over-singing. I guess I hear too many over-singing R&B artists, and
yeah,
she's not
true.
That at all.
That's true. Well, you know, sometimes the voice just doesn't do it for you, and that's one of those cases, I am sorry to say. A voice that did do it for me, my last pick on this Buried Treasures episode, is Marie Clo. I'm going to play a track called At Ease. Marie is a French-speaking artist, singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, musician, producer, does video too, who has been writing songs that she says comprise a conceptual feminist narrative. Songs about breakups, songs about sexuality, songs about frustration and the challenges women face, none of which I could have understood previously because her three EPs, all called Shell, S-H-E-L-L with the E in parentheses at the end, they came out in part one, part two, part three, all in French. Now she has put them together as Shell, S-H-E-L-L with the E in parentheses, a full-length English album. And, you know, I have enough trouble speaking English. I don't know about people who can write songs in both French and English or any other language and English. You know, it's sensual, it's wise, it's infectious. I just fell in love with this. Really good stuff. And I love when an artist, too, you know, writes you personally. Salute, Jim. You may like my record. I may. All right. I don't know. I listened to about 100, I'm kidding you not, different tracks this pick of Buried Treasures. I was killing some time in a waiting room, and I just kept going through. You know, maybe I'll find something better. Maybe I'll find something better. So I had a lot to choose from, and this rose to the top. Marie Clo, At Ease.
Flashing your coat watches, ooh, see yourself out. Your body will not atone, ooh, I said it out loud. Cumbersome girls make you dry, those violent lights. Desire to spot ourselves, ooh, ooh, flaws in the design. Mercury under your tongue, get your hair wet, let it down. At ease, be at ease. Clutch your breath and rhythm up, play the system that casts you off. At ease, be at ease.
Marie Clo, that track brings me to Montreal. I'd love to be there right now.
Yeah, I'd like to be, you know, somewhere different.
Anywhere,
right?
Yeah, anywhere. I'd settle for going to your house to grill some steaks.
I hear you on that one. The last artist I want to play, Jim, Armand Hammer and The Alchemist. It's a collaboration. I focused on this because I'm always interested in what Billy Woods is up to. He's one of the MCs in Armand Hammer with Elucid. And, you know, just a linchpin of the New York City underground scene. He has been around for decades making beautiful, incredible, deep music. The fifth LP just from this project alone, Haram's the name of the record, fourth for this particular duo since 2018. Woods is incredibly prolific. One of his records, Hiding Places with Kenny Siegel, was in my top 10 for 2019.
So let me make this clear. Woods is under the pseudonym Armand Hammer. It is not the multinational corporate industrialist.
Correct, yes. And I think there's a very tongue-in-cheek quality to that as well, because they are the most anti-corporate group you could possibly
name.
Well,
and he has a partner called The Alchemist, right?
Yes, correct. Well, The Alchemist is a well-known name in his own right, a great DJ. A lot of people may know him as the DJ for Eminem, but he's done many, many more things besides that. He's been making records since the 90s. And this is a terrific collaboration. The Alchemist creates these kind of noirish backdrops. It's very abstract. But somehow these guys make it work with their very specific, detailed rhyme schemes. Earl Sweatshirt guests on the track that I'm going to play, Falling Out of the Sky. I think it's one of the best tracks on the record. There's a little bit more accessibility in this record than some of Billy Woods' other projects, mm-hmm. which can be very claustrophobic sounding. Mm-hmm. This one's there's a little bit more openness here. But, if you've never heard the name Billy Woods before, by all means, seek out just about everything he's done. You're going to find something that you love, I guarantee. And I happen to love this latest record under the Armand Hammer moniker with The Alchemist. Armand Hammer on The Alchemist on the album Haram. This is Falling Out of the Sky on Sound Opinions.
She dropped a load on me before they closed the door. I be with nobody who knows what's going on inside. My father's body swollen behind my eyes. I ain't cried for him in time to return solar. We on the ride forward, the reverse not working. Sometimes we collide, the black sky full of supernovas. The stars that died, no lie, I'm still rooting for us. 2 foot in the soil, rhymes forged to conjoin us to the cosmic. Spliff burning like crude oil, pool water drip like osmosis. I set the mood for you, you know the vibes. Today I got time for it, run for it. Five on me like I'm Bob Hurry for the tribe slime. Mamba mentality stars falling out of the sky. Slide.
He was a star. When I got him, he was a star. Sly told you that everybody is a star. The only problem is some people haven't been put in the dipper and pulled back on the world.
Falling Out of the Sky, Armand Hammer and The Alchemist. The album's called Haram. Greg, it kills me at the end of that track when it opens up into that Everybody's a Star chant.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I'm really loving that. Do you have a favorite recent song that's not getting enough attention, a buried treasure of your own? Share it in our Sound Opinions discussion group on Facebook or in our Patreon community. Coming up, we'll explore the all-virtual South by Southwest. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. We're back, and we, like all of you, are eager to get back to seeing live music regularly. We've reported on the perilous state of music venues and the valiant efforts of activists to help them hang on, but now we're getting into a festival season. You know, Greg, as far as festivals coming up, Bonnaroo and Outside Lands are selling tickets for September and October. Glastonbury's going to happen in May over in the UK, but it's going to be all virtual. Riot Fest, Pitchfork, Lollapalooza in Chicago, these massive gatherings have all got permits and are looking at maybe doing festivals, although nothing is certain yet.
It seems like wishful thinking at this point. I mean, the numbers are going in the opposite direction right now that they want them to be. A lot of the concert promoters that I talked to said that they're kind of writing off this year, much as they did last year, and hoping to get a fresh start in early 2022.
I get physically anxious when I'm watching video of, say, a baseball game in Texas with 40,000 people.
It's hard to imagine being in a crowd of that size right now. I think anybody who's got a brain is going to be wondering, what kind of risk am I taking? So I think the festival promoters are smart for, despite the fact that they're losing a ton of money, pulling back just for safety reasons purely. I mean, what can be more important than that?
Well, I remember, last year, one of the things that really drove home for me and you that we were entering a sad new world is when about a week before it was scheduled to start, South by Southwest 2020 pulled the plug.
Yeah.
Just shut down this multi-million dollar festival you and I had been going literally for decades, almost close to three decades. Most important music festival, I think, in the world. It's the Cannes Film Festival of the music industry. Didn't happen in 2020. It did on five channels of your computer for a couple of days in 2021. We spoke to the guy in charge of booking the music. He's been doing that for a decade. This year was very, very different. To see, how that transition worked and what he is thinking about the outlook for his festival and other festivals moving forward.
So we're talking with James Minor, the head of the music festival. Cautionary note here. James is just coming off like one of the most hellacious weeks of his life, because as every year with South by Southwest, it's a huge task,
there
monumental.
No tired like the South by Southwest tired.
So a few days after the fact, though, James, how do you feel it went? A lot of expectations, a lot of what's this going to be like? How do you think it all fell together?
You know, I'm actually really happy with it and really proud of what we were able to do. The first day that it started, you know, we were kind of bracing for the worst, and you know, there were a couple technical glitches in the beginning, but and it was really great to see people interacting and, you know, commenting on the acts, and yeah, it was a little emotional at times too, just seeing the enthusiasm and seeing people discover mm-hmm. these artists.
Just to refresh people's memories, South by Southwest is probably the single most important music festival in North America for a couple of decades now. Attracts people from all over the world. And
in
bands.
2020, yeah. Some people talk about, I don't know, some basketball game. But but for us, you and me, and so many of the people listening to our show, the moment they realized this was a global crisis
right.
was when South by canceled in
right.
2020.
March Madness. So that was a last-minute cancellation in 2020, obviously. It was right. You were right behind the first wave of COVID becoming a thing that was going to affect us for some time. When did you kind of come to the realization that this was going to have to be virtual again in 2021?
Well, I would say that the goalposts kept on changing throughout the year. We had hopes that we would be able to do something live, and we just kept on, you know, waiting, because the ideal thing in our mind would have been to be able to do a live event. And a safe one. I would say that we held out hope as long as we could, until I would say sometime in the fall, we just figured that it wasn't something that was plausible.
Was it an option to not do it at all, or was it going to happen some way, somehow?
We knew that we wanted to do something in some shape or form. And we started looking at a virtual event pretty early on. And we did a lot of research. We attended a lot of streams and streaming festivals and tried to figure out what we liked, what worked, what didn't. But yeah, we started looking into it very early and started preparing as well as we could, knowing that, you know, even if we would be able to do something that was live, not everybody would probably be able to come.
You know, I'll tell you, James, you know, I was really impressed at the technology. It was fairly flawless. There were a couple of conference panels that started a little late here and there, right? You know, two things in the panels, I had a really hard time concentrating. You know, I'm teaching on Zoom, we're recording on Zoom. You know, it's hard. It's not the energy of being in the room. I was impressed by the professional sound and visuals of the performances, but again, you know, this damn computer, it wasn't the same. Not to mention, there was no smell of spilled Lone Star beer or fajitas grilling in the backyard.
Right.
I was kind of impressed. It was almost too pro, my friend. You know, I wanted the dinge and the grunge of those little clubs on 6th Street that often don't have world-class acts, you know, bands that have traveled from Korea and France and, you know, big American bands playing in a room for 150 people. I wanted more grunge. Everybody was like on an MTV set.
I wouldn't go that far. There was variation as far as how things were produced, and we kind of left that up to the showcase presenters to decide what they wanted to do. We didn't want it to be a situation where everything came out you know, extremely glossy, and but we also didn't want to have, you know, 60 showcases come in that were all set in music venues. You know, everybody's attention span is extremely short right now. Fatigue is a very real thing. Yeah, we wanted to really kind of like lean on variation as much as possible.
The venues, the choice of venues, you said left it up to the presenters. What was the range of types of venues and the locations that you were accessing at the festival?
Yeah, I mean, it was all over the place. We had kind of the standard South By venues that you'd expect.
So standard clubs in Austin. Austin's got the tons of live music venues. You guys have no shortage of that.
And some. I mean, like the Brit Showcase, I saw a good hour or two of. I mean, they were in a grunge. They were in the Brit equivalent, I assume, of Sixth Street in Austin. However, I saw some other performances that were really like stage sets almost.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we also had, the Jazz Refresh show was filmed at Abbey Road Studios. So, I mean, that was a whole different thing. The Norwegian Showcase, you know, that was filmed in a, you know, partially in a cable car, partially, you know, in a town square in northern Norway. And it's just like all snowy and epic. The Taiwanese Showcase, that was incredible. They filmed part of it at a machine factory in Taiwan.
Hey, South by Southwest! We are Fire X. Enjoy the show.
Part of it, right next to this very famous mountain range, and another one in a temple. So I mean, it was kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
You mentioned hybrid events. You're starting to see more people saying, "Well, let's just do next year virtual anyway." You know, it's more convenient for a lot of our clients to do it this way. But the idea of doing a split event where some of it's live and some of it's virtual to please both constituencies. Question for you is, where do you think the concert industry is heading, and specifically South by Southwest in 2022? Are you going to do virtual events too in 2022? Or would you want it to all go back to the way it was 2 years ago?
Well, I mean, that's a pretty big question, but I can't see South by Southwest not having a virtual aspect from here on out. It will be a hybrid event. Mm-hmm. There's no way around that. I also think as people's attitudes shift towards things like this, and do see it as, as something that kind of adds on to an event as opposed to a replacement, I think people will see more value in it.
James, for decades, more than three, one of the signs of commitment of a young act was to come from Italy or Germany, or geez, it's hard enough to get from Chicago to Austin, right? And to be there, and you're in the room with them, and that, you know, I always had two or three acts a night I'd pick, but I like to wander. I like to be open to surprises, right? And with the five channels on the South By login, it wasn't quite the same. I was bouncing around, but it wasn't quite the same. I mean, I could see South By being hybrid from Austin for those acts that cared to perform live, and then other people joining virtually. But I don't know if it would be as desirable if I'm there in Austin and then somebody else is projecting from their home country, you know?
The focus is always going to be live artists, and it's always going to be the live event. You know what it's like. You just can't fake something that's live. You can't fake, you know, the experience of standing in front of a live performing artist who's actually really doing it. And that also, that's a way that artists can prove that they can do what they can do, that it's not all smoke and mirrors.
And just waiting to see something that's at 10 o'clock and you're there at 8:30, you know, that the wonderful magic of being surprised by, you know, those one and a half acts you're going to catch first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we're all excited about the idea of seeing a band live. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we live and breathe that. That's what we want to see. There's a generation, several generations out there that have been raised on their cell phones. For them, maybe it's not such a big deal, and that's your future. That's also the future of the music industry. Because let's face it, touring is an incredible hardship. You know, I remember vividly at South by Southwest seeing multiple bands that, as Jim said, came a long way to play this one show. You know, how many times have you guys toured the U.S.? This would be a frequent interview question, you know, because a new band. Well, we played South by Southwest. That was their one show, and they flew all the way from, you know, from Germany to play this one show.
Who were the guys from Poland who still write to us every week?
Oh, Trupa Trupa.
Trupa Trupa.
Oh, yeah.
I still think that's still their only U.S. dates. The reason I love them is because I saw them at South by Southwest at midnight on a Saturday. You know, I was thinking about this just this morning, actually. Like, the music industry thinks, oh, everything's going to be fine. We're gonna have the live event again, you know, back in a matter of months, 6 months maybe, or less. But the music industry, the live touring industry, wasn't in that great a shape
to begin
before
with.
COVID hit. What makes them think it's going to be the same or better now? There will be people who are anxious to see live events, but is it a sustainable model? Now that we've had a year plus of this sort of tech virtual experience going on, you know, especially for, I'm thinking of the under 30 crowd that is living off this stuff, and it's perfectly natural to them. It's as natural to them as going to a club to see a $5 show was to us when we were that age.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens when the floodgates open. You know, everybody's going to want to be out on the road, and yeah, I mean, I guess we're just going to have to see what happens. And like you said, it was, you know, the music industry was not in a great place, you know, before all this happened. You know, artists were basically relying on live shows as income. And yeah, right now everything's just kind of on pause.
Mm-hmm. And we don't know how many of those venues are going to remain because the challenge isn't over yet. NEVA did its work and there's some aid coming, but we're already seeing venues close, even despite that.
Oh, yeah. We've had plenty of venues close in Austin. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there are more to come in the following months.
Well, I know South By welcomes all the major global national corporations and Joe's record company from his basement, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think it's going to become a Walmart Microsoft world with Live Nation and the major global corporations controlling live music, or are the mom and pops going to rebound?
I mean, that's always a struggle. If you think about it, you know, these small venue owners, they were never making a lot of money to begin with. I mean, they're doing it because they're passionate about music. They like that sort of that lifestyle, I guess. But it's not something that you get into to get rich. So yeah, I mean,
gotta be for love.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that they're kind of used to the struggle to a certain degree. It doesn't make it right. But I mean, they're, you know, hopefully resourceful. They're not really getting that much support. Hopefully it's still on its way.
I don't know why we thought, James, that you would have a clear picture of everything for the future.
Yeah.
You have the look of a man who's glad that South by Southwest 2021 came off, and who knows what's next, just like the rest of us.
I probably have more questions than anybody.
Well, congratulations. Pulled off another South by Southwest. I do hope we get to see you next year in person with beers in hand.
I hope so.
What's the first live music you want to see, and when will you feel safe enough to go see it? Leave us a message on our website, soundopinions.org.
Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we're going to talk to an actor, Paul Raci, who has been nominated for an Oscar for his role in Sound of Metal, which has a heavy musical component to it.
A really great music movie. For more Sound Opinions, listen to our podcast wherever you find such things. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors.
And speaking of sponsors, every week our show reaches hundreds of thousands of curious listeners from around the globe via podcast and on 150 public radio stations nationwide. If you'd like to learn more on how your business or organization can also reach this engaged and educated audience, you can email sponsor@soundopinions.org. That's sponsor@soundopinions.org.
Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our intern, Sol Delgadillo.